You're listening to the Resilient Fertility Podcast, a space where we explore the intersection of food and culture on the journey to motherhood. I'm Anissa Woodall, a holistic certified nutritionist and mother of two adventurous boys. Join me as I guide you on how to reconnect with your innate wisdom, develop a growth mindset, and harness the power of food and habit to embody the mother your child needs you to be. Whether you're planning to become a mother, trying to conceive, or are already a mother, you'll find valuable insights and practical tips to enhance your fertility and optimize your pregnancy. Tune in every other week for thoughtful and informative conversations about the power in your hands on your journey to motherhood. Welcome to another episode of the Resilient Fertility Podcast. This is Anissa talking, and I just wanted to share with you today about how skipping meals may be impacting your ovulation and really addressing the intertwined relationship between your eating patterns, your cycle health, and your fertility. So stay tuned for that. But first of all, I just wanted to stop and recognize that this morning, as I've been going out on my morning walks, I just can't help but notice the first signs of spring beginning to emerge. I don't know about you, but I've really been noticing the Indian plum leaves really starting to blossom. FYI, those taste like bitter cucumbers, which is so good for stimulating digestion in the morning and really like a little taste of summer. So try those if they grow near you. I've also been noticing the beautiful fuchsia colored salmon berry blossoms that are coming out. Those are the first blossoms that come out in the Northwest where I live, and they're just so beautiful. The sun is shining brighter than ever as it melts away those final traces of winter snow, and I'm really starting to feel like spring is arriving. There's really something truly magical about this time of year, isn't it? It's like the world around us is shedding its winter coat and really stepping into a new chapter of growth and renewal. And this is actually a season in both the Baha'i faith and in Persian culture, which is my own heritage, of cleansing and renewing, with the spring equinox representing the celebration of Nowruz, or New Day, which means New Year. And it's really a very appropriate time of year to celebrate new beginnings. So we actually just celebrated a fun tradition last week called Charshanba Suri, which involves jumping over the fire while reciting the phrase Zardiyaman azto, sorkhiyoto azman, which literally translates to, you're essentially asking the creator or the fire to let go of the things that are no longer serving you, literally means help me let go of the yellow and give me the red. You're asking for the fire. And so the yellow represents the things like the mindsets, the thought patterns, stalling your growth, the negativity, illness, bad habits. But also physically, right? Like eradicating excess hormones, stored toxins, or even your backed up bowels. And so those are the yellow, right? The things that you want to let go of. And you're asking the fire or God, the creator, to give you the red, right? The health, the vitality, the rigor, the robustness, the metabolic fire. And this really, I love this because it's like a prayer. It's an alignment of awareness where you're just trying to align yourself with nature and give yourself that mental, the mental awareness of bringing your body into those places, that you want to let go of those things and you want to bring your body into that place of renewal. And so spring cleaning needs to happen really on all levels, right? Internally and externally. And I so love this tradition as it symbolizes the innate drive to renew and rebirth ourselves better with each coming of spring. And, these mornings, as I'm marveling with nature's transformation, I think about the incredible capacity for renewal that lies within each of us. And so just like the earth around us, our bodies really possess an innate ability to cleanse, rejuvenate, and prepare for these new beginnings. So whether you are dreaming of motherhood or you're simply striving to embrace a life filled with vitality and wellness, now is really the perfect time to embark on your own journey of inner renewal and transformation. And so this is really why I decided to, for my seasonal meal plan membership, create the Renew Spring Hormone Reset Meal Plan, that I want to share about just briefly with you today before I get into the rest of the episode. So this meal plan is, you know, it's a 20-day hormone reset meal plan. It's designed to nourish your body from the inside out, providing the perfect foundation for renewed energy, balanced hormones, and radiant health, with a nutritional focus that helps you let go of excess hormones and stored toxins. So to help you power your liver with those nutritional requirements, right? The workers, the manufacturer workers that work in the manufacturing plant in your body, right? The liver, the processing plant. To help you bind toxins intended for elimination, to feed a diverse microbiome, and to help you nourish and grow a healthy baby if that is your goal. So whether you're embarking on your journey to motherhood or you're simply seeking to embrace vibrant health and vitality this year, with each nourishing bite, you're not only fueling your body, but you're also nurturing your dreams of a vibrant and resilient year ahead. So my Renew Spring Hormone Reset Meal Plan is releasing this spring equinox, March 20th. So go ahead and check that out in the show notes. You can join my seasonal meal plan membership, and you'll be receiving that as part of the membership, or you can go ahead and just buy it on its own. So go and check that out. And on this topic of cleansing and renewing, today I've wanted to share a personal story of how one form of cleansing was perhaps a little too much on my body as I was trying to conceive my first child. But don't worry, it does have a very happy ending. And I want to tell this story because it paints the perfect picture of how important it is to cue into your body's signals and how to know if a diet pattern is or isn't working for you. So in the first days of March, as Baha'is who aren't pregnant or breastfeeding or who aren't young children or elderly, we have a spiritual duty to fast for 19 days from sunrise to sunset, meaning no food or drink for that period of time, the 19 days before we celebrate the new year on the first day of spring. And I was kind of trying to figure out what I should do. I was in this place in my own health journey where I will share this in another podcast soon, but I had been in this place where I wasn't able to walk for 4 months. It took me about a year to fully recover my mobility, which delayed our conception journey. And I was finally in that place where I was ready, right? Like mentally, physically, I was at that point where I was just so ready to conceive. But it happened to be March, and I was, you know, dealing with this dilemma of, you know, what should I do, right? Should I go ahead and do the Baha'i fast, even though I'm not yet pregnant? Or should I not do it and know that the reason why I'm not doing it is to go ahead and create a child who will carry on God's word, which is one of our purposes as Baha'is. And so I personally wanted to do a little bit of a compromise. You know, I knew that, you know, my nutritionist self knew that it would be unlikely for me to be able to ovulate if I were fasting, you know, or to be able to conceive a child. And so what I did was I had fasted for about a week during that cycle. And the fascinating part about this was that, you know, I had expected my normal ovulation day to be about a few days late, understanding that I was fasting, right? However, I, you know, despite tracking my calories, I was tracking my weight, I was trying to really make sure that I was getting adequate nourishment, even though I was spacing those meals out, you know, before sunrise and after sunset. The fascinating part is that even though I didn't lose any weight, I still didn't enter into my fertile period until I stopped fasting. And, you know, and I'll get into this in a minute for like how to identify that. But I just wanted to take a moment to help you understand why that might be happening, right? So a lot of times people will ask, you know, is it safe to fast while trying to conceive? And here's the thing. Your body needs to have a consistent flow of nutrients, calories, and hydration throughout the day to both achieve and maintain a healthy pregnancy. And when it comes down to it, it's really about whether your body feels that it's safe to get pregnant, right? Because that adequate nutrition, the calories, the regularity, signals to your body the consistency, right? Knowing that there will be nourishment here and ready to be able to nourish that baby should you conceive. And if you are inconsistently eating, maybe you're skipping lunches or you're skipping breakfast, or perhaps you're eating insufficient amount of foods, like maybe you're just snacking throughout the day, but you're not eating a substantial amount to truly nourish your hormones, your body will wisely perceive this as a threat. And this can represent a lack of food security, right? Just like there are other hidden stressors that can often result in perhaps a diagnosis of unexplained infertility, or that can lead to irregular cycles or skipped ovulations. Some of these other hidden stressors might be things like occult infections, or having, too many endocrine disruptors in your body, having autoimmunity or nutritional deficiencies. And, you know, fasting is just like that, right? It's a stressor. And when done to excessive levels, it can impair your fertility. But the great thing is that impaired fertility resulting from fasting is completely reversible, depending on the extent that you were doing it for and kind of what your state of health was going into it, right? So if you are in a place where perhaps you are about to undergo a spiritual fast, maybe you are observing the Baha'i fast, or maybe you're observing Ramadan. I want to be encouraging and say that, like, if you are of vital health, you should be able to recover and conceive just fine. So don't worry too much about that. But if you are currently struggling on your fertility journey, or you're struggling with your hormones, know that doing such a fast can interfere with your healing process. And that doesn't mean that you can't do it or that you shouldn't do it, but just know to expect that, I suppose. And so the thing is, though, is that as you reestablish a consistent diet again, you can continue to make that positive change for your fertility. So on my own journey, when I was trying to conceive, back in 2017, I had practiced the fast, maintained sufficient calories, was eating to satiety, and perhaps even further just to make sure I was getting enough calories. And even then, I expressed no fertility signs until I stopped fasting. And even though I expected to ovulate later, I expected 1 or 2 days or so, but I actually didn't start producing cervical mucus, which indicated that I was starting my fertile period. I didn't start producing that until I had stopped fasting. So the reason why I stopped fasting was because I wasn't noticing any fertility signs. And that was a really good red flag to me, saying, like, okay, if I want to try to conceive this cycle and I'm continuing to delay ovulation, it's just not going to happen. My body needs that nourishment, even though I was getting enough calories, right? So again, calories are not the only thing. For me, I think it also came down to body fat, right? Because your body will, it has various hormones, leptin being one of them, that communicates to your brain that says, how much stored body fat do I have available, right? What kind of stored resources do I have available that can then indicate, how drastically your body is going to be needing that external nourishment, right? If you have a lot of stored body fat, and if your body is sensitive to, perceiving that it has that storage, then it's going to likely be okay with fasting. And that's actually something that, I'll get into in a minute with, women who struggle with PCOS or who have excess body fat, or perhaps a history of gestational diabetes. Sometimes fasting can actually be helpful for these women. What I found to be such a wonderful reflection of my own body's resiliency was that as soon as I started eating again, that was the first day, and eating during the day more regularly, that was the first day I started producing cervical mucus and really had started my fertile period. And hormonally, what that means is that I was finally starting to produce more estrogen. And you require a minimum amount of estrogen to be able to ovulate. And as soon as I did that, I was able to ovulate several days later, actually, which was one of the reasons why it was so important that I was tracking my cycles. I was very in tune with when I was expected to be ovulating, how long my fertile period tended to be. And that was how I was able to identify that as a red flag that, like, you know, hey, I'm not fertile yet. Hey, you know, my ovulation is not going to happen at this rate, which was then what led me to making a change. And so I want you to just consider this, that, you know, as you are considering various eating patterns, right? If you're considering intermittent fasting, or if you've been doing intermittent fasting and you're finding like, hey, this really isn't working for me, to just recognize physiologically why those cycle changes might be happening for you. And, you know, and doing things like skipping meals or intermittent fasting for many women is not a good idea, you know, especially when it comes to experiencing consistent hormonal vitality. Now, there may be, like I said, metabolic states where fasting can be beneficial for fertility. You know, like I said, with women with PCOS or who experience, you know, some insulin resistance, you know, fasting can improve insulin sensitivity in these women, and that can overall aid in hormonal balance and fertility and actually help them get pregnant. So it's really going to be a matter of considering where you are on your own health journey and what your personal metabolic health is like. And if you are fasting for health reasons, the best time to fast would be during your follicular phase, which is pre-ovulation. I probably wouldn't do it, you know, during the heavier days of your period, but, you know, leading up to the period right before you're going to be, you know, having your fertile period, doing a little bit of fasting may be helpful. Now, what this could look like would be doing an extended overnight fast, for example. So meaning having an early dinner, while keeping your breakfast at a normal waking time. This has been shown to be helpful, particularly for women with PCOS, but especially if you're just trying to support better insulin sensitivity. And this can also be helpful for women who maybe are struggling with their gut health. You know, if you have dysbiosis or SIBO or histamine intolerance, and you just need to, and you find that you have a lot of benefit from fasting because you get that gut rest, that can be so beneficial for letting the inflammation in your gut calm down, and to also have that first breaking fast, that first break fast meal to be a really gut health supporting kind of meal. So something that's going to really introduce good probiotics, you know, have a decent amount of fiber to help you bind the stool and the bile, and make sure that you're eliminating the toxins that are intended for elimination. But really, if you are going to do any kind of fasting, I would follow a more intuitive eating kind of approach, meaning like you want to be checking in with yourself and say, you know, is this impacting my level of vitality, right? Are your cycle signs normal? Are you producing cervical mucus in normal patterns? Are you having lower basal body temperatures? That can be a big red flag for women, you know, if fasting or other eating patterns, or even just general hormone balance, if that's kind of taking a hit, right? If you're low on your vital energy. And also wondering, you know, like, are you feeling depleted in the long term from doing some kind of more long-term fasting practice? So, and I also just want to say that fasting is not the only way to cleanse your body, right? So taking steps to support your liver detoxification can really do so many wonders for cleansing your body. And most people think of detox, you know, when they think of detox, they think of like juice cleanses or chelation therapy. And those may not be the best options during preconception and the pregnancy phases of your life, but what if we changed what doing a detox meant, right? Like, what if it meant doing, like, what if doing a detox meant actually just nourishing your liver to effectively detoxify, supporting your digestion to optimize your microbiome and properly eliminate toxic waste? This is a big red flag if you're not pooping daily or if you experience gas or bloating regularly. if you're reducing your toxic burden, right, by cleaning up your daily use of household and personal care items. I have another podcast episode that I will link in the show notes, talking all about ways to reduce your toxic burden on your overall health and hormone journey. Because here's the truth. Many endocrine disrupting compounds, hormone disrupting compounds like BPA, phthalates, and PCBs, they bioaccumulate in your fat tissue, which means that once you get pregnant or once you lose weight, you start mobilizing your stored body fat, you also mobilize these accumulated toxins. And, you know, in pregnancy, when you mobilize stored body fat, it's intended to fuel the growth of your pregnancy. But the downside is that these toxins are also mobilized. And, ideally, we don't want to be exposing either your preconception eggs to this, particularly in the 3 months leading up to conception is when it can be particularly harmful and, causing more oxidative stress. But we also really don't want to be exposing your baby to this while you're pregnant, right? And so ideally, focusing on detoxification is going to be best during the preconception time. But if you're already pregnant, I guess here's the question, right? Would you rather allow those mobilized toxins to continue to circulate, being trapped inside your body, especially because when you're pregnant, you're often not pooping as much, right? Progesterone can be a little bit more constipating. Or do you want to support your body's natural detox systems to function effectively so that you can eradicate these mobilized toxins with minimal fetal exposure, right? So if you're going to be mobilizing your stored body fat regardless, it's better to at least help your body eliminate them more effectively, if you maybe didn't get a chance to do that before getting pregnant. And we don't really need research that tells us all of the different toxins are found in cord blood to really recognize the harm that comes along with having too many endocrine disruptors in your body. But there's plenty of it out there if you do need it. As Dr. Tracy Woodruff, the senior author of a study titled Environmental Chemicals in Urban Population of Pregnant Women and Their Newborns from San Francisco, as she states, she says, pregnant women in the U.S. are exposed to many harmful industrial chemicals that have been linked to premature birth, low birth weight, and birth defects. But estimates of how efficiently pollutants are transferred from mother to fetus have varied widely. She says, our findings have found that many chemicals do indeed accumulate in the fetal environment and are absorbed at greater levels by fetuses than by pregnant women themselves. This may have significant consequences for the growing fetus, since many of these chemicals are known to affect development. End quote. So, if you're hearing this and you're starting to feel a little fearful, this is your encouragement to discipline your mind, to not go down the path of what ifs, but to allow pregnancy, and if you're preconception, allow this to be a time when fear and anxiety to serve an important purpose, to ensure that you do the very best for your baby, right? You don't have control over 100% of your environmental exposures in your entire life. But what you do have control over is how effectively you can support your body to not only reduce future exposures, but to also eliminate what toxins you have stored in your body. Pregnancy is so nutritionally expensive. It is critical to ensure that you have the nutritional funds to fuel both healthy fetal growth and maternal detox processes as your body provides this really important environment to grow your baby. So you can, quote, do a detox while pregnant or preconception if doing a detox is actually just nourishing your body and your detox systems properly and taking the appropriate lifestyle steps to support healthy elimination. So just to wrap it up, I want to remind you that your body is so resilient, right? In that cycle of the story that I was telling about the conception of my first child, I ended up conceiving, I think around day 21, which was much later than I would normally ovulate. But because I was tracking my cycles, because I was so in tune with my hormones and my fertility signs, I knew exactly how to change what I was doing to make sure that I was going to ovulate. and to then be able to optimize my chances of conceiving. And this is why in my course, Resilient Motherhood, I walk you through how to be able to do that yourself, right? How to track your cycles, how to understand what's going on hormonally, and how to change your habits to better normalize your cycles and get your body into a place where it is going to be the most receptive to a pregnancy if that is what you are going for. And if you're not trying to conceive, then to just achieve optimal fertility, because optimal fertility means optimal health. So, wrapping it up, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of the Resilient Fertility Podcast. Remember that your journey towards balanced hormones and optimal fertility is unique, and understanding the intimate relationship between your eating patterns, your habits, your cycle health, and your fertility is really key to your success. If you're ready to take your preconception efforts to the next level and want to deep dive into sustainable strategies to finally achieve optimal hormonal resilience and prepare for your healthiest pregnancy yet, my course Resilient Motherhood is for you. If you're seeking personalized guidance on your fertility journey, consider exploring my Resilient Motherhood one-on-one coaching package. I can't wait to join you. Thank you so much for listening today. I really do appreciate you choosing to spend this time with me. If you gained value from today's episode, I'd love if you can act in reciprocity and share this episode with a friend. Screenshot your favorite part to share on your social media, tagging me at Anisa Woodall Nutrition, and leave a review in Apple Podcasts. This serves me to expand my reach of connecting with women who need this medicine. I'll see you on the next one. I hope you already know, but for legal purposes, I need to share that this podcast is for general informational and educational purposes only and does not constitute the giving of medical advice. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast are at the user's own risk. Each user is responsible for making their own decisions when it comes to their reproductive health. Remember, you are always the sole authority over your health, and if your case requires medical attention, use your own discretion to ensure that your needs are met. Thank you for listening.